All right, who wants to play us in?
Not it.
What does play us in mean?
Say something to
Mahalo,
start.
everyone.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be like a
Hello,
formal thing.
everyone, and welcome to
No, you don't
Gastropods.
have, I mean that works too, I guess. You know what? We're starting with this now.
This is the
It's
cold intro. This
the
is the cold
second
open.
episode, or maybe the first one if the first episode was the pilot, but it was an aired pilot, so we're gonna say this is the second episode. And this time, last time we were discussing something that people had been, talking about in the community a lot, this theory, the Asgore truck theory, but this time we've concocted something brand new for your listening pleasure.
By we
And
mean chill.
yeah,
Lest we
it
accidentally
was
take
me.
credit.
No, yeah, these two freaks are just along for the ride.
Yippee!
But I've cooked up something good. I think you're all gonna like it, and it's called misspelling theory. It's actually more like misspelling and incorrect grammar theory, but that's not doesn't roll off the tongue very well. But it's about all the instances in this game where characters spell things wrong or use grammar incorrectly, and what that could mean thematically and how it's all connected. And I haven't talked too much about this to our my fellow hosts here. So we're just gonna start rolling into it, unless any of you guys have any predictions, anything you are expecting about this that you wanna speculate on before we get into it.
I think
Well, I
I know
mean,
what I think I know what the final boss is. I think I know what the final secret boss is with your theory. I think I know where you're going with this. And if you don't, I will go there.
all right. Well, we'll get there, perhaps.
I have no idea where you could be going with this. I'm very excited. The only thing I know is that I've been thinking about this with the because I was watching one of my friends play Chapter 4 recently, and then they played against the Biblioplex enemies, and I was like, huh, interesting. What's going on with that? Like, it's a very like in your face thing of a very simple task, and so it feels like it's meant for you to like sit there and observe it. So,
So, without any further ado, we're just going to go through the game in order, and I'm going to point out every time that this happens, and we are going to get into that, and like from there we can talk about what this means and how this can all be connected. So the first thing, when you boot up the game, of course you have the Light World segment, you go to school, and at school we meet the first character who spells things wrong, and that's Temmie. Now, Temmie doesn't do anything. I mean, doesn't do anything the whole time, the whole game, really. But there is some interesting stuff with Temmie with regards to the eggs that we will come back to later. So there could be, for now, you'll need to remember that Temmie does bring an egg out and sits it on the desk while talking in her classic Temmie style. But for now, we don't know anything about the eggs yet. We're going to move on. So as we go through chapter one, we have the first opportunity to get an egg. We don't the Eggman in all of his like flavor text and stuff doesn't talk particularly strangely, so nothing to report there, but we'll come back to the eggs. There are a couple other instances in chapter one where we see this, and from here we can start to see a bit of a pattern. And the first guy we see this with is Rules Card, who talks in his funny accent. Now,
Even
people
his
have.
name spelling.
It is. They had to make a whole music track title telling you how to pronounce it because it's spelled weird. Now, Rules Card is kind of a weirdo. He doesn't have much plot significance yet, but there's been some speculation about what this could mean, what his role could be. And I think he's in someone else we're going to come back to at the end, and we can maybe speculate about what his role is going to be in the future. Because he has been in most of the chapters. He wasn't really in chapter four, but he was pretty notably in the first three. And so I think it's reasonable to assume that he will continue to be a relevant character and maybe, lead up to something bigger. But the other two instances in chapter one where we have misspelling that I think much more interesting, and the first one is Jevil. Now, Jevil doesn't necessarily spell things wrong, but he does talk in a weird way, and he does misspell a couple of things. So the lines I highlighted here is, a marvelous fun is about to break free, and he spells marvelous with two L's. A beauty is joying in my heart, and there's a lot of other similar kind of, you know, improper use of words in a way that is weird. And there's one other instance where he specifically spells something weird, and that's when he says boys and girls, B-O-I-S-E-N,
oh, yeah.
Girls. So that's another thing that's like specifically pointedly spelling something wrong. And we do actually have some developer commentary on why Jevil talked that way. He mentioned during the anniversary live stream, Toby did, that Jevil's way of speaking is intended to evoke like the way that localized JRPGs in the NES and SNES era were like translated kind of funnily. He said that they were poetically stilted. And that I think, is funny. Definitely going to come back as we go through this.
Right.
Yeah, that was going to be something I was going to ask later. It's kind of like, how much of these, if you knew, how much of these misspellings are carried through into the localizations in Japanese and stuff? Because I know people have been making other theories based on how things are specifically or oddly translated into other languages.
I would guess most of them, because most of them are pretty noticeable parts of their characters, but I don't know for sure. There's at least some things that I can tell you definitely, and we'll get to those as we keep going. The last thing in Chapter 1 to make note of is the library, which is, you know, the library sign is spelled wrong. This is a joke that was carried over from Undertale, but it is notable that, you know, the first time you see the library is, you know, foreshadowing that it'll be important in Chapter 2, and all of Chapter 2 takes place inside of there. So, you know, that could be seen as directing towards that. But I think in Chapter 2 is really where we get into the meat of this theory. And if you knew anything, if you had any speculation about this going, it was probably related to the backstory cutscene with Birdly, where he explains the bit with him and Noelle at the spelling bee. The game makes a big deal about this. It's like a giant cutscene and a way of giving backstory that doesn't really exist in the rest of the game in this kind of big flashback scene. So it definitely stands out, and that this was the root of the theory. And my thought is, in the Spelling Bee cutscene, of course, Noelle breaks down when asked to spell the word December, and Birdly, like, learns to love the appreciation he got for spelling things correctly when Noelle couldn't. He became addicted to it, and it made him a worse person in ways that he elaborates on. And he, like, you know, he fights for the side of ignorance now and what have you. And so this kind of leads into the theme I'm kind of getting at here, which is that the way Deltarune uses spelling things wrong and using incorrect grammar is playing into the theme of freedom and writing your own story and not being beholden to, you know, what has been laid out for you already. It's you're writing something in your own way. So obviously, going back to Jevil, we see, you know, the first secret boss starts that idea of freedom that goes through a lot of this secret stuff. We see Temmie, who in Chapter 2 we learn has some sort of connection to the eggs because we can see the eggs on the table next to her in the school when you collect them. And so that's very interesting. And Rules Card, again, we'll come back to him. The library, you know, plays into the same thing of, like, you know, books and spelling and being smart. That's where Birdly went to study, and it's also where we see this cutscene in the first place to establish the idea of spelling being important. Now, there's a couple other characters in Chapter 3, most notably both Queen and Spamton. Both have spelling/writing quirks. Spamton's is very famous and notable and plays into the same idea. Obviously, Spamton's one of the characters that's most relevant to the theme of freedom and being controlled and wanting to go your own way. But Queen, I think, is also pretty relevant here as the one who gives us the exposition about creating Dark Fountains, and who, you know, you have the whole scene at the end of chapter two where she is encouraging Birdly to make a Dark Fountain and all that stuff and has to be stopped by Ralsei. And, you know, there's the whole thing of, you know, Dark Fountains being potentially representing creating fiction, you know, writing. And so that ties in as, you know, Queen being there this whole time is like, you know, ties back into the freedom slash creation slash your own story kind of theme. There's one other character in chapter two that has some weird quirk, and that is the guy who looks at all the milks to find the best expiration date. He doesn't use
the
punctuation.
Guy who calls your family a freak later on.
Oh, the cat guy in the light world. Okay.
Yeah. And so he's notable in chapter two for standing right next to the box of eggs that you can put the egg into if you get the egg in chapter two. So that's another connection between the eggs and spelling stuff wrong. So that's half the stuff I have down so far. We've kind of started to get the theme. We've started to get the idea across. I'm wondering if you guys have any other thoughts on chapter one and two.
A pitch. Here's my thought. We were talking about these characters, specifically you bringing up Temmie and then also Jevil and Spamton being noted. Do you think there's any chance that it's relevant that those three characters, and I guess also Queen somewhat, have voice lines? Like, you know, they, like,
it
all three of those
be.
Have, like, audible lines within the game. You can hear them talk and or laugh and or sing.
It could be.
Potentially that could be something. I don't know. I just, the fact that we brought up Temmie here along with the secret bosses makes
it's
me
definitely,
feel like those three are all kind of have that in
strange,
common.
A strange commonality with the grouping thing. And, you know, if we're talking about, you know, creating your own story slash writing, could that be expanded to art in general and music by an extension of that? So, you know, the other time we see like a real life recording is Chris playing the piano while you're in the events, right? So that's another instance of not voice acting, but a recording of someone.
Yeah, the other
that could potentially tie into that.
Is it's TV time.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, I was also going to get into that with chapter three, but
yeah.
I think there are some instances where Tenna misspells words.
I didn't have any down. I tried to look.
Well, feature, right?
I didn't think about feature. That's a feature. How did I not think about feature?
that was the one that came to mind for me.
We'll have to get into Tenna then. So going into chapter three, well, let's start with Tenna then, because I didn't actually, I think chapter three probably has the least instances of this, but there's a couple very notable ones. So now if we're thinking about Tenna, we're thinking about feature. Your mind's probably going to go to, you know, his connection to Spamton, who is, you know, the most obviously misspelling stuff guy in the whole game.
Right.
So, you know, Tenna's potential, like, role and connection to that, the whole thing with the Shadow Crystals and freedom and what have you. Obviously, Tenna, you know, literally traps you. He literally constrains your freedom to make you play his awesome game show. So that's kind of an interesting thing. You know, he's working directly with the Knight. We'll come back to the Knight. I didn't have Tenna penned in here initially, but definitely a lot of connections you can make there.
Right.
The point I was specifically found very interesting in chapter three is in the NES game, like the secret one in the S-rank room. The sword route, I guess, is technically what it's called. There's nothing specifically in the game that is spelled wrong, unless you count Northern Light, but I kind of think that might be just like a proper noun name. So go to Northern Light is that. But in the soundtrack, the music track that plays when you are in the Ice Palace is Glacier, but it's spelled wrong. It's spelled with the E before the I, in all caps. Now, interestingly, this is not the only time in the Deltarune expanded lore that we see glaciers spelled this way. On Noelle's blog during the Spamton sweepstakes, it is one of the music tracks she's like, it says she's listening to, in like at the bottom of the page. So that's kind of interesting, right? That's like, it seems that there's specific attention being drawn to the name of this music track. I think the only other track that shows up in Deltarune that has that same distinction of being like name dropped on Noelle's blog is Raise Up Your Bat, which has, you know, obvious significance there.
Right.
So that makes me, you know, that draws another connection to the secret bosses again, to the freedom thing. It draws a connection to the weird route, which is very interesting. Obviously, the final boss of the weird route is Spamton in Chapter 2, so, you know, another connection there. But I think that specifically the original game having one of the most drawn attention to, like, spelling that's weird in a way that, like, is notable because nothing else in the game is, so it makes you notice more that this is sort of out of place, and that it starts being out of place in the Ice Palace when you have Noelle, like the Noelle Ice Mage person, freezing people. This also, yeah, of course, goes back to the thing that we talked about with Jevil, old games spelling things weirdly and having weird grammar. Now, this is literally an old game. We know Toby loves his SNES RPGs. So, you know, something to think about there. You know, Zelda 1 famously has very weird cryptic dialogue and is considered a classic, and this is directly riffing on it. So, you know, maybe a point there. That's pretty much all I had for Chapter 3. If you guys have any other thoughts on anything there that I might have missed.
Yeah, I mean, I think Eram being mare backwards is also a point, like as a nightmare, I think.
Sure.
I maybe not as explicit as a misspelling, as more of like a flip.
Do any of you guys have anything else to add on Chapter 3 before we move on to Chapter 4 and some of the juiciest details?
Was there anything else in Chapter 3?
No, nothing happened.
No, nothing happened. It was a pretty boring chapter. I mean,
it's a bunch of mini games. With, like, who cares? Back,
like, what was misspelled? Is that Toby loves doing like little, like, text gags all the time?
Yeah. So they're also, he also just makes a lot of grammar errors. Like,
there is everyone chat around the water cooler rather than chats, and I don't know if that one was on purpose or not. I didn't include it here.
I assumed that text was an instruction. It was like everyone go chat around the water cooler. Like, when that, I thought that was a purposeful choice. I did not even consider that.
Also,
chats around the water cooler.
You could also interpret the water cooler's speech of like booble and babu and booby as being misspellings of bubble, in which case that kind of goes along with the foreshadowing thing that we saw with the library, where this is foreshadowing Chapter 4, when the water cooler becomes a real character. You could say, I don't know, that's maybe kind of strange, but could be another potential thing that this is all leading to.
I could see that.
Okay, going into Chapter 4, this is where we get some of the biggest things. So the first character we meet in Chapter 4 who spells things wrong is Jackenstein, who, you know, very famously, not only is your taking too long, using the wrong form of your, but also has lots of other things. He spells zone, Z-O-A-N, and many other similar things. He's
like
a goofy guy.
Like,
he's a silly, silly goofball.
He does, like, a lot of, like, text manipulation. It feels like a weird way to put it, but, like, you know, the your too-too. Or
right.
You're taking too long. Is it taking too long?
Yeah, like a sentence mixing, like a YouTube poop.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that kind of goes along with the whole, you know, write your own story thing. Take what's already there and swap it around and change it. And that's another character with voice acting, by the way, that's on this list.
Oh, that's a good point.
The Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia. I also think it's, for Jackenstein specifically, probably important to note that he is like the you know, in the world where, like, this is chapter one or two, he's probably the secret boss. He is, like, the archetypical thing that used to be played with, but now is alone in the corner in the dark and, like, is, as quote-unquote,
abandoned. He's ashamed. Yeah.
And he's like, so I think that's also maybe a point to consider.
Yeah. There's two other big things in chapter four. The first thing is, I believe we were talking about it briefly before we got started, is the Bibliox enemies, who are the little book wizards who ask you to spell things correctly in order to spare them. Another instance where it's like very in your face that spelling is important, which is another thing that kind of tipped me into this direction. It's like, what's being cooked here? What does this mean? And a lot of important words like festival and stuff. And it's like,
right,
maybe that plays into the foreshadowing thing. But I think the thing that's most interesting to me about specifically the Bibliox is chapter four is not the earliest you can see one of these enemies. The first time you see it, you can see a Bibliox is in chapter three in the lead up to the egg room.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another direct connection between spelling and the egg. And that's such a strange choice to put a chapter four enemy in chapter three like this, that it has to mean something. Right? So I think that this might be something that's getting tied in there.
And specifically, it's not just like, oh, you fight this enemy, right? It's like, it shows up in one of the mini games.
Yeah, it's really weird. The last thing, which is probably something that most people notice during their playthrough, is Susie's letter that he writes from Gerson to Alvin when she rewrites it in the Light World for him. Susie's not very smart, so she spells a lot of things wrong and makes a lot of grammar errors. And not only is she doing that, but she's doing that in the same letter where she talks about writing your own stories, even if they're not perfect. That's like a specific line from the letter. And it's a letter from Gerson, whose whole thing is that you need to pick up the pen and continue writing. And writing in your own direction and doing what you want. And I think that's like kind of the smoking gun thing here is this is another incredibly important instance of misspelling not only happening, but seemingly being relevant to the plot. And it's connected to this same theme of not being beholden to what's come before and forging your own story. No, I guess not what I need to say. But,
yeah, I mean, I can't think of. I mean, that makes sense. I think pretty clearly, all of these sort of references are all about that kind of freedom. Like, you know, for the main instances of the misspellings, it's all related to these like secret bosses, which all have this freedom motif, freedom idea, so core to each of them. And I think that. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that
and obviously
to writing, to building your own path.
Yeah, and obviously Gerson being the secret boss of chapter four, being the Shadow Crystal guy, means that if we count the Shadow Mantle holder guy as the secret boss of chapter three, that means that every single secret boss has had something related to spelling things wrong in it, in related to that character, which is very interesting to me. Now, there's one last thing that I have not mentioned until now, and I wasn't going to bring up until I had brought up all of the points that I wanted to, and that there's one character I haven't mentioned yet who spells things in a weird way and uses grammar in a strange way and does not capitalize any of his letters, and his name is Sans.
Ooh.
There's a lot of speculation about what Sans' deal is going to be with regards to this game, the whole, like, you know, Sans came from Deltarune thing. And if we're talking about that, you know, Sans and Papyrus are two characters that very pointedly in Undertale use weird, like, uppercase and lowercase. And I can't think of very many other specifically characters in Undertale who spell stuff wrong or spell things in weird ways or use weird grammar. There's instances of it happening, but not really tied to any of the major characters. So
I mean, Santa that's kind of an interesting, like, named after fonts, right? It is like,
that's true. It's typing. Hello, it's writing.
It's us, the writing characters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're shouting out writing characters, I think you also have to pull up Gaster. As
that's true. That's in the name same of the way podcast. That he has,
yeah. This hey, it's on the logo for a reason, man. But like in terms of odd ways of speaking,
absolutely.
Hands is like very much tied to these sort of motifs.
And we know Sane is going to somehow be relevant, considering he was the cliffhanger at the end of chapter 4. So, like, what's going to happen with him? I think it's going to be something important.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, the game, like, going back around to, if you look at the soundtrack, lots of things become clear, right? Where it's like the song that plays at the end of chapter 4 being the place where it rained, and it's like, yeah. Oh, okay. Like, no fucking shit, Sans is going to be important. Another thing is that going back to the Biblioxes, the words aren't just important. They're also, like, most of them are words that are, like, in the soundtrack. You know, the thing that's interesting? Like, Atrium, Guardian, Gallery, Flashback, and Sword. And the three words that aren't are Roots, Festival, and Synthesis. All of which we have reason to believe are important or might show up as songs later on, where like Festival is the next chapter. Roots we see has its own...
it's a motif, right?
It's a motif, but we also see it has its own prophecy panel, just like Gallery.
Right.
And I think, actually, I want to transition that into where we see that prophecy panel. We have... one of the very odd and prophetic NPC characters who talks about how, I had something here, but then it got mixed up, and it's the, you know, where the children played, or like, what is it?
Yeah,
the place where the forest would grow,
the children followed the pointed
followed
tail.
Followed the pointed tail, yeah, and it's all jumbled up.
Yeah.
Junior jumble.
Yeah, and it's like this idea of like all of this being mixed up.
Wait, I forgot to mention ICE. The ICE guys spell stuff wrong. The ICE shows up in Undertale related to Sans's and Papyrus's crossword, and it's the only place he shows up. Sorry, I just wanted to put that on the record. Another connection to Sans.
I've heard people also talk about ICE potentially being related to Burning Eyes, which is like, I didn't grasp the purpose of that one. But, like, people are saying that Icy is going to be, like, potentially meaningfully relevant to a Dark World. Like, it's crazy.
God, I hope so.
I need to watch the video. I saw people talking about it, but...
I hope Icy is the final boss. I hope that's the angel. That's why Susie was so weirded out when Ralsei was like, this is the true form of the angel.
It's just, like, imagine you're in like a magical, you're in like Narnia, and you see like this is God, and it's a picture of Ronald McDonald. Like,
I also want to bring up maybe we've talked a lot about misspellings within the context of this game, but what I would call like. I don't know, the original misspelling, the smoking gun for Deltarune, is the, with the Switch release of Undertale, right, you have the clam, whatever, goner, or whatever you want to call it, that talks about their neighbor Susie, spelled S-U-Z-Y.
Spelled wrong!
Spelled wrong! That's sick.
Yeah, I think that lots of Deltarune isn't just about, like, because obviously, like, in the late chapter, there's about, like, writing your own thing, right? But it's a lot of it is about, like, doing it afraid. Does that make sense? Where it's, like, doing it wrong, doing it afraid. And I think that's where, like, lots of the misspelling stuff comes in.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, the spelling bee itself is, like, Burley won the spelling bee, and he liked how happy it made him because other people thought he was smart. it wasn't like an intrinsic thing, it was an extrinsic thing. And that might even tie into the reason the game exists at all, which is that Toby had this dream, and he said that, like, he doesn't know if that ending is particularly good, but he has to write it. He feels like it's something that he has to do. And so this, like, on a very meta level, it's like, you know, this idea of doing things for yourself rather than for, because you want other people to, you know, think you're a real big, real cool guy, a real big shot. It's you want to do it because you feel like you have to, you know. Yeah, and so on that same note,
yeah, you got it.
I mean, Deltarune, the title of the game being an anagram of Undertale, that's kind of even like, you know, the spelling got scrambled up. It's spelled in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe kind of a stretch, but I don't know. No, it ties into the meta level.
This is on my list of things to bring up, where it's like, so much of the game is basically like, it was sold as Undertale's parallel story, right? And it's like, people have been like, what does that mean from the get-go? And yeah, I think, okay, outside of just the spelling stuff, obviously there's so much about like the temporality of what's happening in the story, where it's like implying that the existence of routes, obviously, is like, oh, okay, trying to do things again and again and again, to try different things. But then, like, there's more explicit references to stuff like that, where, like, you have the, we're talking about eggs. Let's go to chapter 4, Egg Room, right? Where, I think that, I'm going to kind of, like, bridge something over here, where it's like, in addition to, like, writing or misspelling, doing it wrong, doing it afraid, let's move that into like the thing of like art, right? Because you have this thing of like Chris trying to draw this image and not like being unable to do it and doing it again and again until they can draw it in one single, they can sketch it in one single perfect stroke, but by the time they manage that, the entire page is just completely messed up, and so they draw the tree over it. Which, okay, that first of all, I think that section is something that I'm really passionate about, is like, oh, this is really revealing, but also like tying it in here, it's like the idea of doing something again and again till you make it perfect, but you've already sort of, by not being satisfied with the first result, you have washed away the impact that all that everything you've done could have had. I think that all that ties back into like the doing it scared, doing it afraid. Don't be afraid to just write with misspellings. It's like Gerson says, it's like, you know, you don't have to remember the exact words, because if the sentiment is there, it'll carry through.
Mm-hmm. I also have another character I want to pitch to add to the list, who I think has, like, not, again, like, not misspelling, but has very odd grammar, especially in Chapter 4, and that's Jockington, I think.
He grows the beard.
Jockington grows the beard,
that
but
comes
also
up in the same anniversary stream you mentioned, Chill. That's the first time that we hear about that.
But not just the grows the beard section, but when you talk to him in the light world, I need to look this up actually. But he has
I remember what you're talking about.
Phrasing dialogue. He's like, "You are, comma, the world's capital E enemy," and it's this like odd phrasing that he doesn't really have in chapter one. He's kind of like talking normally, and in chapter 4 he's like phrasing stuff off. I don't know if that's just like a characterization change that Toby wanted to pull, but Jockington both being relevant to the prophecy, and once he becomes relevant to the prophecy, has this like turn sort of.
Okay, I have a related thought here. So during that segment when you talk to Jockington in chapter 4, he's with Caddy, right? And then we know that Chris and Caddy had some kind of previous history, and there was the thing about like Chris trying to summon a demon with Caddy, and I've seen some people speculate that that's why Chris has the soul.
Yeah,
and I think it would maybe be like, why is Jonathan talking like this all of a sudden? Because he's hanging out with Caddy, maybe there's some, I mean, you know, obviously the soul is like the most obvious thing of, you know, freedom and what kind of freedom you really have to being controlled by something. Maybe this is Jockington being playing into that same theme if he's hanging out with the person who summons demons.
That could make sense.
Maybe we'll
sure.
see Jockington defy his fate because he has the freedom to choose his own story. Maybe everything will come to pass except for that, and Jockington's the real protagonist. Ever think about that, huh?
Huh.
Jockington is the knight also.
Yeah. I mean, also with Jockington, he's also the person in the close your eyes cutscene in chapter 4 when you try and think about the knight.
But the knight, it's Jockington.
The knight, Chris thinks of Jockington. So Jockington, I don't know. I feel like he's weirdly related. I think he's weirdly related to this. To something. I don't know. I think he'll be more important. I don't think the Jockington grows the beard as a cutaway gag.
I think that
based on all this.
My impression is that, like, I think that it's a cutaway gag, but I think it's actually important and relevant because I think it signals a time skip. That's my hot take.
Ooh, interesting.
Like, oh, this, okay, I could do a whole other, actual, like, not meme theory. Or maybe I could do a different gag.
Are you saying this is a meme theory?
Yeah, I don't think this is a meme theory.
This is real serious analysis.
Well, yeah, it is legitimately. I think that it's just like the meme presentation or like meme, like, what do you call it? Like initial, the way you present it initially, it's like a meme. It's like, wait, this is actually legit. But I think that there's a lot to indicate that like Deltarune will have a time skip, which is a thing I've seen surprisingly few people talk about. I want to cook up something about that. Yeah, sorry. Getting back onto track about misspelling and relevancy to Deltarune. I had a thought. Oh. It's gone. Sorry, someone else say something.
Yeah, you're fine. I guess, chill. My question is, how, based on this whole theory, I guess my one thing for you is just like, how do you see it affecting the ending of the game? What's the takeaway here?
So I think that the thing, if I had to make predictions about what we can draw from here, it's that the egg, like the stuff with the eggs, has some relationship to either the secret bosses or the theme of freedom and defying the prophecy. I think the eggs, and by extension, Chris's path, will have something to do with that because it seems that that's kind of the direction the whole egg stuff is going. The other thing,
getting the eggs. Like pisses Gaster or whoever.
Yeah, mystery, right. Mystery voice
without issue, right?
There's also, I think, some speculation we can do on what characters will become more important later based on the presence of their spelling stuff. Weird, specifically Sans and Rules card, because you know, obviously, we could have guessed that Sans would do important things, but Rules card spelling stuff weird and being a character that's introduced so early and showing up so much, it's like maybe there'll be something with this guy. Maybe he won't just be a joke character. Or maybe he will, but he'll be an important joke character.
Yeah,
I could definitely see that, yeah.
And I mean, I think you can tie that back into sort of personality, original item, and what rules card does, where it's like, I mean, you know, rules card, it describes, you know, how to play the game. And the times that we've seen rules card, he introduces like a new sort of, like he almost Calvin balls the game a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He introduces some new.
He makes
mechanics.
His own games. He makes his own puzzles. The other interesting thing about that is he's the rules card that comes with a deck of cards. And the thing about decks of cards is there's not just one game you play with those.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time when you're playing a game with a deck of cards, if there is a rules insert, you're just ignoring it and playing your own game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, so you think that could relate to like the secret boss idea of like abandonment and
maybe. I was just thinking like, you know, You know, you're forging your own, you're creating your own game, you're making your own story. Sure. You don't have to worry about what the rules card says. The rules card, the character is kind of doing the opposite of that, where he's changing the rules to whatever he sees fit.
Mm-hmm.
He's
actually,
kind of
I have
defying
another...
his role as what he does as a lightner, as a darkner,
mm-hmm.
where
yeah.
he's, rather than prescribing a set of rules that you do or don't have to follow, he's making his own rules that now everyone does have to follow.
Sorry, I just
had
thing we need to ask about, where start of chapter 3, you're writing, you're assigning your own name in those three-letter spaces. Anna says, maybe one day you'll learn how to spell your own name.
Spell your own name correctly.
I think it's like a throwaway line there, but also feel like the specific phrasing of like, maybe someday you'll learn how to spell it. Like
it's like
it's something that
it's a chastisement of the idea of freedom, which we see that with Tenna, where it's like, you know, he traps you. He wants you to play by his rules.
But also in like a literal sense, like it's like, why is this like, we haven't seen other examples in the game of Chris screwing up spelling their name, right? So it's sort of implying a history of that or something else. And so it's like, why would
potentially
that be the case? I also want to go back to the voices thing, because I think it is really notable how like important speaking has become as like a, like not like as like a literal voice line, but as like Susie, as she becomes more and more in the forefront, we keep seeing recurring things of this idea of like, quiet people piss me off, like sound being important, or like verbalizing or vocalizing oneself. Like she gets like,
why don't you just tell us?
Yeah, why don't you just tell us? There's the thing versus the knight. Obviously, the whole fight, against like the fake Gerson statue, where it's just not saying anything except those voice lines. We see like voice, like the voice being important as well. For I thought about this because of Chris, because it's like canonically Chris does not speak for lots of the game, like to the point where Noelle is like, oh my god, it's such a relief to hear your voice, and it's like almost like unused. And then when she hears like the soul's voice, she's like, what, hello, huh?
Mm-hmm.
It's a yeah, especially
yeah, I mean, if we're in a
genre where silent protagonist is such a trope, I think that the idea that talking, expressing, verbalizing yourself leads to more agency, and then the lack of agency for our main character, very interesting.
Yeah, I think also for going back to this vocal idea, nowhere in the game is that concept more prevalent than in the mic fight, where you have to key your microphone up to your computer and like scream into it to control the controls in the fight. I think
if you're not playing on the Switch too.
Well, that's not a real device, so
I can't disprove that. I've never seen one.
Same here.
Oh, wait, speaking of device, I'm jumping around.
Wait.
There's the device theory which hinges on the way that files of the game are like named
yeah.
And like I guess coded is not the right word, but like I guess like cased. Yeah, can't, like with the full capitals going on. So
yeah, that could be definitely be relevant, especially since we've been talking about the soundtrack names and like how those are important. Those are like in the same way that like, you know, you can tell by certain file names what's like Gaster related. You can also tell by like the soundtrack file names what's important for this kind of thing, I guess.
Something something image friend.
Have you guys seen that meme where it's like when you know it's Gaster bullshit, but
you know it's some Gaster bullshit.
You know it's some Gaster bullshit.
That's like the name of our podcast. Like
that's
we're trying to prove the Gaster bullshit.
Listen, yeah, we've linked
my,
Gaster.
My friend who finished the game earlier this week, we were talking, and he's like disconnected from the whole Deltarune fandom, so it's really interesting to talk to him. But like he word for word, like said, I know it's some Gaster bullshit, but I can't prove it. And he just didn't know the meme.
That's really funny.
That's awesome. Okay, here's my pitch. I have a pitch. This is my steal your theory away from you at the 7th hour, at the 11th hour, and like make it my own. Because I think you've missed one character that I think has relationships to misspelling, and also a relationship to the game's themes of freedom and writing your own story being very important to their character. Because I think this character, who throughout the game has had an arc about learning to be a person, learning to learn more about themselves,
How did we forget about Asriel Alsay?
I had that noted down on my Google Doc the whole fucking time. You guys just were not on my level.
How did I think about like the ordering of stuff with the pointed tail and Deltarune and not think about Ralsei? Damn. Yeah, you're so right.
So this is good because it means we get a slam dunk right at the end.
We get a slam dunk right at the end. So I think that Ralsei's misspelling as Asriel indicates that, like, I think Asriel's, or Ralsei's genesis is clearly somehow tied to Asriel. I think it's probably just related to Chris missing Asriel and, like, somehow that kind of feeling keys into Ralsei, right? Whether that's an object or whether that's just a creation of the dark, whatever it is. But I think this whole misspelling thing, this whole write your own journey, this all these concepts of sort of that we're keying into the misspelling idea are all related to Ralsei's overall story, where he learns to be his own person. And I think by the end of the story, we're going to see like Ralsei be like, I don't become a fully fledged person and not care about his responsibilities as it pertains to the dark world and not, and like come into himself. And I think those two arcs like perfectly bow tie together in terms of him being a misspelling of Asriel and then learning to break out of that role of like Chris's kind of sort of brother. Because I feel like that's, you know, whatever it is, but that's my concept.
I find it hard to take issue with anything you said. Chris's sort of brother, because like Ralsei doesn't ever, like Chris never acknowledges the similarity. Unless Susie brings it up, Ralsei doesn't bring it up. It's this weird elephant in the room almost. So I would say like, I don't know if it's about like breaking out from that part of it, but definitely from like.
I think in general, just like breaking out of the mold of being tied to Chris somehow, and or Chris / the player, and becoming their own person. So whether that's via Chris related to the connection to Asriel, or via the player regarding the connection to Asriel, like one of the two.
Gotcha.
So that's my take on it.
Let's talk about another character who is like has like a little bit of a weird pronunciation / spelling thing going on, and that's Shom.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's like the name is obviously a very straightforward reference to seam, like the seam of. Like what? Like one of the many seams.
Stitch toy, yeah.
His plushy body. I think that because you were talking about Asriel, and like, isn't there something that indicates like Asriel has like a poster of Shom or something somewhere? Like there's some connection between Asriel and Shom somewhere.
Yeah, I believe there's something that has Shom's picture on it, or something of that sort in Asriel's room. That's if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I think that it's very interesting. The two most like omniscient characters are connected to Asriel in some way. We have Shom and Ralsei, and they both have like some sort of like misspelling thing going on. And
not to mention his connection to Jevil.
Yeah, where it's like that's where the whole snowball starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I generally think that like. Everyone knows Asriel is important because he's not like around, and so there's like this smoking gun. But like, yeah, I don't know how to. This is like my version of like. Except instead of it's some Gaster bullshit, it's like when you know it's some Asriel bullshit, but you can't prove it.
Asriel is Gaster confirmed.
Asriel is Gaster confirmed.
It'd be huge.
You say this, but I actually, like, I don't think Asriel is Gaster, but I think lots of things that people are attributing to Gaster might actually be, like, an Asriel thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a popular theory that, like, Asriel is a Dark World guy. He's been in there before and, like, has been doing shit in there. So it's like, I think there's
the
clearly
with, like,
some
Chris having, like, a save file, right?
Yeah.
With, like, Chris having a save file at the beginning of the game, it's like, okay, like, Chris has been to the Dark World and probably not alone at that time. Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, because, like, there's a, isn't that, I would explain how Des got in there. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of threads.
Before we wrap this up, does anyone have anything else to add?
My only two notes were...
But I really like the way you laid it out and explained it, and I think that it's a sort of thing where, like, I think that even if, like, the scale of how important it is kind of, like, we're not sure yet, if that makes sense. But I think that even if it is just, like, a neat observation, it's like the type of thing where it still recontextualizes or adds meaning to stuff in a very neat way. So I think even if you don't, like, quote unquote believe in the theory, I think that there's parts of it which are, like, undeniable in terms of their importance or the way that they're framed. And I think that's sort of, like, the best sort of theory, like, where you have, like, a strong kernel or seed of truth in the middle, and then you are making extrapolations based on that, like, thematic foundation.
I definitely started this as a joke theory on the Joke Theory podcast, but, like, I don't know. I think it's an interesting lens of analysis, kind of.
Yeah, I think the core concept of misspellings are probably not just nothing is, like, I kind of believe that. And then I think we've extrapolated it a lot.
Because I think the misspellings are not just nothing, I think, is a subset of humor is not just nothing, which I think is one of the most important, like, lenses to look at Delta Run through, where it's like, obviously, the serious scenes where they stop and like Ralsei turns to the camera and is like, hello, to have this exposition scene about darkness or whatever is important. But I think lots of people are like, haha, the lighthearted times are cute and fun, but they're not important, which is why I think lots of people gloss over chapter 3. Despite chapter 3 being, like, I think one of the densest and most important for Deltarune, and then they're like, chapter 4, yeah, we're like, chapter 4 has, like, lots of cool stuff, but I think it's, like, it is explicitly, like, the somber chapter. But yeah, I guess the TLDR is, I think people should look at humorous or quote-unquote throwaway stuff with, like, more scrutiny, because I think that that's where, like, when you're getting the player to, like, clap along and just agree or, like, just kind of go along, those are the times where, like, as an author, you can most easily seed in ideas, right? When they aren't thinking too hard about it. So,
right.
On the topic of humor, I have a final, like, closing thing, and it's related to the ending of the game. And I don't think it's going to be, like, I don't have a theory about, like, the final boss or whatever. I have a theory about, like, a random, like, closing gag, which is that I think that Chris and Susie are going to get a bad grade on their group project because they spelled things wrong.
God, that
would be
so
good. Oh my God.
That's going to be, like, the last, like, bit of this.
That's so fire.